You know, in my career, I have covered many stories. I've interviewed many people, but not one comes close to the horror, the fear, the mystery of what David Politis does. Missing 411. He's got a series of his books. He's working on a film documentary now, too. And it's an amazing story of how people are simply vanishing, disappearing, gone. David's with us tonight for the full 3 hours. In the last hour, we will open the phone lines, questions with David, perhaps stories as well. I have been going through countless emails for people asking questions of David. Some of them I've got with me here, and we'll read them too. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. You are going to be riveted over the next several hours. David Politis received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from the University of San Francisco. Now, he's got a professional background that includes 20 years in law enforcement and senior executive positions in the technology sector. Back around 2012, he was an invited speaker at the 2012 National Association of Search and Rescue's annual conference in South Lake Tahoe. The presentation was on the findings of the Can-Am project that were detailed in his book, Missing 411. Now, the packed room at the convention center heard David give a detailed overview of, at the time, 28 clusters of missing people and the associated elements found within the clusters. Now, you will hear David on this program. He's not going to speculate. He does not guess. And he's not going to reveal his thoughts on what he thinks is happening to these people. You're going to draw your own conclusions. But it's always a pleasure to have you on the program, David, with some new information, too. Sometimes I can't sleep after I've interviewed you. You got me all riled up with this stuff.
Well, George, that makes two of us. I mean, there's many nights where I'll go through a case and I'll go lay in bed and just gather my thoughts. And sometimes my thoughts are out there with the people in the woods that have disappeared, and it's not a comforting feeling.
Oh, my gosh, it really is. By the way, a couple months ago, I had a great opportunity to interview David for our Beyond Belief television program. And he is as riveting on the radio and on television as in person. And, David, just great information.
Well, George, you're very kind, very kind. But the truth of the matter is that you're probably one of the most polite people in the public spectrum I've met in a long time. And it was an honor to be on your show, and I appreciated the invitation.
So what is new in the field of these missing people?
Well, you know, about it. 2 or 3 years ago, when I was in the middle of investigating rural disappearances, several people came to me and they said, you know, I know that you're one of those people out there that keeps an open mind and it keeps your spectrum open, but one of these days you're going to move from the woods, those rural areas, and you're going to come into the city because the profile points that you've identified on these cases, they're going to transition. You are just going to find it. It's just going to be a matter of time. Truth of the matter is I was so occupied with looking at people who have disappeared in the national parks and forests in North America that I was probably a bit taken by that statement, and I kept my mind open, and some things came along, and some people sent me some emails, and sooner or later I got to the point where I was looking at cases of college-aged men that disappeared under unusual conditions, predominantly in the Great Lakes region, but also along the East Coast area of the U.S. And there were some common denominators there that also reflected upon the disappearances we were looking at in rural areas. And after studying that for a year, a few months back, I came out with a fifth book called Missing 411, A Sobering Coincidence. And the factors on that is that canines can't track the people to where they disappeared. They almost seem to disappear under the noses of their friends and family. Many, many times there's alcohol involved, and many, many times they're found in an area that had been searched sometimes 10 times. And this is the same profile points that happen in the rural disappearances.
Just amazing.
Now, one of the weird things is that many times when these people are found, the search and rescue people are never thinking criminal act. They're always thinking, my gosh, we found somebody, whether they're dead or alive, we found them and we can get closure. And they're not trained investigators, and usually when they're found, the body's turned over to the coroner. Yeah, they died in the woods, and that would be the end of it. Now, with cases in the water, it brings home an entirely different perspective on the way the body reacts to water, and there's certain things that the body does in certain periods of time in the water that it doesn't do on land, and they're readily identifiable. And after looking at a series of cases where there were secondary autopsies, and in some cases where the original medical examiner was honest and would face the consequences, say the person disappeared 7 days ago, the coroner would come out and say, well, they might have disappeared 7 days ago, but they've only been in the water for 2 days.
Huh.
And, George, this doesn't happen once
no.
or twice. This has happened many times.
Over and over again, too.
And then, on top of that, many times, the coroner comes back and says, yeah, we can't determine what caused the death of these people. And this has happened also in these rural disappearances. And when you try to stay confined to certain points that you've identified and you don't want to wander, then it excludes a lot of perimeter cases that we might have looked at, but the reality of it is that we're trying to stay to that straight criteria. Now, some other detectives were working on something similar to this, and they used the cases and they identified them as the smiley face killers. And they claimed that in certain instances, they would find some graffiti next to the site where the people were found. And these guys, a guy named Gannon, who's retired from New York police, I give the guy a lot of credit because most detectives don't want to work missing persons cases. They want to work homicide cases, robbery, homicide,
right.
et cetera.
Right.
But I tell you, Gannon from New York, he really paid attention to what was happening to these people in the Hudson River and in other rivers around that New York area. And he determined that certain bodies couldn't have ended up in locations where they did. He worked with coroners to figure out that the bodies weren't in the rivers as long as they were. And these guys were looking at it from a local area perspective. And when I looked at it, I knew that I had cases in rural areas that were not only in the United States and Canada, but they were also in seven other countries that exactly met this established profile. Well, I knew that if the profile went to these young men that were disappearing in these rivers, then it also probably was happening in other areas of the world.
Jeez.
And the one other area right now where everyone could go to if they're near a computer is go and Google canal deaths in Manchester, UK. And what's happened is there's been 61 deaths of young men in Manchester where many times the police can't determine the cause of death. They've thought if it was a serial killer, they'd be able to identify it, but they're saying that it's not a serial killer. And the most amazing statement is that they're saying that none of these cases have anything in common to bring them to focus, but they're just random acts, even though it's been 61 people that have died in 9 years.
And they can't tie any of them together.
I don't think they want to.
That's scary.
That is scary. And if you look at the facts surrounding those deaths, no one ever sees these guys going in the water. There's never been a suspect. Many times they can't determine the cause of death. It's these young men are walking home from a pub or a bar, they disappear. But they're disappearing in canals where sometimes the water's only a few feet deep, and they're found in the water deceased.
And they can't figure out how they die?
That happens in many cases in the UK. It's happened in many, many cases in the US.
What about the cases that are happening around British Columbia, Canada, where feet are showing up on shore? Just feet. They're not finding bodies, but feet.
You know, we looked at that because in the part of the profile points that we've identified is that people are missing shoes and clothing many times when they disappear. And then we started looking at these feet, and some of them have been found on the Northern California coast, and some have been found on lakes and things in North America and in British Columbia. Now, there's an entire series of these in the Vancouver area where they haven't been able to identify anybody. and they've got DNA, and they have the shoe, and they have the foot, but they can't really talk much more about it because they, some coroners have claimed that the foot comes off first if they're in the water a long period of time, but they should be able to put that foot with a missing person if they have the DNA.
You would think so. My God, somebody would report, hey, my son's missing, my friend, whatever.
Right. Exactly. And you bring up the point about British Columbia, and I get questions all the time from Canada, and I know that there's a lot of people from there listening right now. And the area of lower British Columbia, in that Vancouver, northern Vancouver area, there are so many people that have disappeared. And I've got a couple friends that live in that area, and they tell me all the time, hey, there's people disappearing up here. And the news does the same thing here as they do in the States. They report it for the first couple days, maybe up to 4 or 5 days, but then you never hear about
it. Then they stop. Then they go on to the next tragedy.
Exactly. And why are these people disappearing? How are they disappearing? And if they're found, what are the circumstances? And you really don't hear a lot about it. 99% of the time, these people are hiking alone. They get ahead of the group. They're behind the group. One way or another, they aren't seen when they disappear. And they're usually found in areas that baffle the investigators. And it doesn't matter if it's a Canadian or a U.S. search and rescue person. Sometimes when they get on the media, they're stumped. They can't answer the question how the person got to where they were found.
And let me ask you this, David. Of what's the percent of those people who disappear who are found dead?
So in this profile that we've established, that's really the only one I can talk to, is I would say it's probably 30-40%, maybe slightly higher. But then the people that are found, the uniform issue with them is they don't know how they got missing. They don't remember how they went missing. They can't explain where they were. It's like a very unusual memory loss.
All right. Of that percent, 30 to 40%, maybe a little higher, that are found dead, then what's the percent of those who are found alive? And again, they don't remember or anything like that, but what's that percent found alive?
Found alive, I would say probably 50, 55, maybe 60%.
That high. Okay. So there's a percent, though, that we just don't know where they are, right?
Very high percentage, yes. Of that 40% that are left, I would say those that are gone, maybe 10 to 15% we can't find.
Totally vanished.
And George, I'm not talking about some small effort to find this group. There is enormous effort to find them. We're talking about FLIR in the sky. We're talking about multiple canine blood-sniffing bloodhounds. We're talking about sometimes people walking shoulder to shoulder. And we're talking about covering the area multiple, multiple times.
Yeah, one person sends you an email from North Carolina, James. He said, of these people who are found, do they still have blood in their bodies? Interesting question. I never asked you that.
So there are a few unusual cases. It's called exsanguination, where some bodies are found and there's no blood in them. And I've written about that in some of my books, and it's really unusual. It's not a common trait. And in my last book, I wrote about a woman that disappeared, and that they had that issue, and they couldn't find enough blood to do tests on her in the body. And the unusual part of that was that they couldn't find any wounds on the body that would account for the loss of blood.
Almost like they're vampire people out there.
Yeah, you know, except that you would think with a vampire-type incident, there'd be marks or something.
Or something.
There never is on these.
Now, in the book series, we've got, what, four different books, Missing 411?
Five.
Five now. Okay. And what's the latest on your movie documentary?
So we just got back about a week ago after a lengthy trip up through Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and back down through northern Colorado, where we did an entire series of interviews, and it was phenomenal. And I can tell you that I'm really critical of the interviews, and if they aren't going well or if the information isn't good, I'm one that's going to speak up and say, hey, this is crap.
That's true. You don't hold back.
But the reality is that some of the people we found to interview, George, just came to the plate. And
beautiful.
Sometimes the cases that I wrote about where we went out to find and interview victims, sometimes the story is even stranger after you get into the minutia of the data than it was when I originally wrote about it. And we've got some pretty big name people that some others out there in the world are going to recognize in the movie that stepped up and wanted to participate with us that are experts. And then we have some county sheriffs in some areas that absolutely confirm the strangeness of some of the cases that I've written about. So I think right now we're doing really well. We should be finished filming by the end of December. It'll then go to editing, and that could take months. So I tell people don't expect anything before September, October.
Okay. We're with David Politis' series of books, five of them now, of the Missing 411 series, and soon to be his movie as well. Just a riveting story of how people are disappearing. And initially, David, these were all around the park systems. Have you started looking at, you know, cities where people have disappeared to?
You know, we're staying with that disappearance of college-aged men that have disappeared in a city environment that fit a profile. And we can talk more about that later, but
okay.
The reality of it is it's really exact. It's college-age, educated young men. Most of them are big-time athletes. Most of them are on scholarships for either academics or athletics. We're talking about the cream of the crop young men that have vanished.
That's right. And what about race? Does that matter?
Predominantly white males. And I've stated in my past books, and it's staying continuous here, German descent.
Now, how in the heck, if someone is taking them, I'm just saying if, how would they know their nationality?
That's the part.
That's weird.
It's truly baffling. I don't know what to say.
I mean, would somebody have access to their dossier or something? That's strange.
Well, when you get into it, you realize that it can't be something normal. This has to be something so far outside the bounds of what you and I and everyone else understands. Because these young men are so smart, so athletic, so easygoing sometimes.
Top of the line.
Yes, exactly. There aren't any vagrants that I've written about that have stumbled into the river and drowned. These are unknown circumstances of how they got in the river that baffle the cops.
Are they generally spotted by somebody an hour or two before they disappear?
Sometimes, but again, that time of the disappearance, they don't know, because a lot of times the person, in many instances, they're in a bar drinking with friends, and their friends say, all of a sudden, we lost contact with him. We don't know where he went. We texted him, we phoned him, and it was like under their noses, the person disappeared.
Even like a guy said, I'm going to go to the restroom, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but he never comes back.
Exactly.
Jeez. Unbelievable. David, I'm going to go through some cases with you and have you update us on some people with basically a list of these people. But this is shocking. This isn't getting solved, is it?
Well, you know what I tell people is when I give a presentation, to me it's like spokes in a wheel. And I started off with just one or two spokes, this missing young men in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
This is another spoke in the wheel. And I've got a feeling the spokes are going to increase before we really solve this.
And when the inner city disappearances, what percent of those are found dead?
99%.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a very scary high profile. There's only one case I know of where somebody disappeared and was found alive.
All right, we'll talk about that too then. We'll talk about those people disappearing in cities. And like David said, 99%+ are found dead. So much more to talk about here with David Politis. His book series, Missing 411, his website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for all the latest information and news. Well, as I mentioned, I did a Beyond Belief television program with David Politis as well. Take a look at it, if you would, by going to beyondbelief.com. It's 99 cents for the entire month. What a great promotion. but look for that program. David spells his last name, P-A-U-L-I-D-E-S. Okay. Welcome back. David DePaulides with us, of course, his series of works, Missing 411. And David, those books are still available, are they not?
Yes, and I warn people not to buy them on Amazon because there's resellers out there that are just ripping people off. But on our website, they're $24.95, canammissing.com.
You know, that's a good point because I've seen some books that would sell retail for $19.95 and they're on Amazon for like $100. Crazy.
It's nuts. And every once in a while, I'll get an email from somebody saying, why are you charging so much? And it's not me.
Not you. No, not you at all. Let me go through some names of missing people, and you can give us updates or tell us the story behind them, okay?
Sure.
Neville Jewell from British Columbia.
So this kind of brings on a story about a very experienced hiker. He's on the Howcrest Trail near Cypress Mountain in northern Vancouver area. Parked his car on this trail, started walking. He texted his girlfriend at 2 o'clock, said he was going to be home on time. He was in the West Lyon area. Didn't show up, didn't come back. They started a search right away. They pulled his cell phone forensics, and it kind of was showing some activity in a specific area, in a specific ridgeline in the Capilano watershed. And for people who have been to northern Vancouver before, there's a famous Capilano suspension bridge, and that's in this area. They brought search dogs in. They never found a scent. Bad weather hit the area immediately after the search started. Another profile point. The other profile point being is that when canines can't find a scent in an area for the victim, that's something we pay attention to. Make a long story short, this happened September 12, 2015. They gave up the search, and Neville Jewell has never been found.
Never been found. So that's one of those percents. Poof,
right.
He's gone.
Right.
Sending texts to his girlfriend, and he's gone.
And I think that, you know, for the people who are listening to me for the first time, one of the vetting points that we do is that we take out the commonalities of, well, is it an animal attack? No, search and rescue eliminates that. It's not an animal attack. Could there be human predation in the area? Well, there's no evidence that a crime's ever occurred in this area before. So is it easy to disappear in the wilderness? Well, maybe if you wanted to, but the people here that we're talking about, no mental illness issues, in happy relationships, non-suicidal. If they were suicidal, if there was sign of human predation, if there was sign of animal predation, that would eliminate it from our research.
Next up, Tom Billings. Tell us about Tom.
This is another tough one, 22 years old, in the same area as Neville. Trail runners said that they saw Billings just before he started to hike in the area of Lynn Canyon in the same general area. Well, scent dogs that were brought up into that area, they found nothing, even though the searchers had people that put him in a specific place. After that, they found nothing. This is in an area of Grouse Mountain, again in that Capilano area. He left his cell phone in his room because it was broken. He left his room at 9 a.m. that morning, telling roommates he'd be back by 9:45 that night. He discussed hiking this area of Grouse Mountain with his roommate. He was an extremely experienced hiker, and he had made big trips to Russia, Siberia, Belarus, Latvia, Israel. It's a lengthy list. This guy was well-known in the hiking circles, and it was confusing to friends and his father why he had tried to leave and make a hike on a mountain when he finally started at that base at about 2 p.m. He knew better than to do this, so it was confusing to him why he did. And a massive, massive search was inhibited by bad weather, and it was also inhibited by the fact they never found a scent in the area where they knew he was going to be. So we have two hikers now that have disappeared in the same area with the same profile points. Both have never been found.
How did these stories come to you? Do people share them now? Insiders?
It's unbelievable now, after doing this for a number of years, how many emails I get from people saying, you know, you really ought to look at this area, or you really ought to look at this case. And I will tell people, because it's funny, they hear you and I having a conversation, and maybe they've listened to three or four of our interviews, and they think that they understand what is happening here. And I can tell you that in all the interviews I've ever done, maybe 4 or 5% of all the facts and elements have come out in these 100 hours of interviews. But all the minutia of the facts is in the books, and that's really the meat of the issue.
That's right.
It's these little things where, like he said, he left his cell phone in his room. In a lot of the cases that we write about, the people didn't have any transmission with them. They didn't have a sat phone. They didn't have a cell phone. They didn't have an emergency transponder beacon that we tell people to carry. And for whatever reason, it seems to be more the norm than not.
These are just amazing stories. I got another email in from Ralph, one of our great listeners, who said, David, are you familiar with the case of 4-year-old Laura Bradbury, who disappeared from Joshua Tree in California in 1984?
Again, we might have looked at it, but if it doesn't fit these profile points that we've identified, then we wouldn't look at it much further. So it was probably a quick look. There was probably some other things associated with it, and we passed on it.
Yet so many people are disappearing from these parks. I know some people now who have not, just because of listening to us, they have not gone on a park trip camping outing or anything like that. They've said, I'm not going.
Well, you know, and I get this all the time. When you make an appearance, people come up to you and they ask you a million questions, and they say, well, you know, I've decided I'll have to take my family here. And the reality is that I tell people, you should go. But just be cognizant that this isn't the safe haven that many have made the forest and the woods out to be, because it's unbelievable how quickly, especially a small child, can disappear even though you think they are in their presence, in the immediate presence of you. And then there's also, I think there's a macho-ness to some men about going into the woods and being able to survive. Yet I know dozens and dozens of cases of hunters that have gone into the woods and they've never come out. And I know that if they would have had an emergency transponder beacon with them, they would have lived.
They would have lived. That's right. David Koch, tell me his story.
Well, this one's a tough one. 36 years old. He disappeared May 25th, 2005. In the exact, and I'm talking the exact same area that Tom Billings disappeared 8 years later. He was an associate publisher and sales manager for a magazine called DM Review. It's an IT magazine. He's on a business trip to Vancouver, had a wife, and had talked about going up to Vancouver and being able to take these outdoor trips because he was an enthusiast of the outdoors. He took a trip to Grouse Mountain. He told his wife he was going there, and he was on one of the last trams to go up to the top of the mountain. It was about 7:30, 8 o'clock. He rode up there with 25 other people. It was all on videotape. He's wearing sandals, a T-shirt, and shorts. It was beautiful weather. And when he got to the top, showed him getting off the tram, and he walked over towards an atrium for a couple minutes, caught him on CCTV going back to the visitor's booth and or to the bathroom. Within a couple of minutes, the TV didn't see him anymore, and he disappeared. Everything at that top of that mountain was open until 10 o'clock, and it was normal for people to go up there at that hours after work. Immediately after David disappears, the weather changes. The headlines for the paper in Canada were, "Weather hinders search for Heartland man missing in Canada."
That happens a lot, too, doesn't it? The weather just quickly changes.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And they looked for him intensively for 10 days. 400 rescuers, multiple helicopters with FLIR, multiple bloodhound teams, in addition to hundreds of volunteer searchers. And it stated that it rained almost nonstop for the next 5 days from the time he disappeared. Now, fast forward, and he disappears on May 25th. June 7th, in an area 2,100 feet off of one of the trails on the mountain, in a pool of water, they found him deceased. Now, that area had been searched multiple times, and the searchers said they were confused that he was found there. Now, this is the part, and it goes back to the missing men who had been drinking in and were found in rivers. This is one of those cases that it's a dead-on match. The autopsy said that he died of hypothermia. But the medical examiner stated he went missing on May 25th, but Mr. Koch died 6 days later on May 31st. So where was he?
Where did he go for those days?
And end up right in the area in the middle of searching. Now, just for food for thought, he was also of German heritage. Things to think about. Where he was found was not where he perished, number one. There were no tracks going in and out of that area. Searchers specifically stated they found no broken branches, no clothing or threads of clothing in the area that they had searched and where he was found. And they said that this was the largest search in 10 years in that area.
It's almost as if, David, they go through some kind of dimension or some kind of door, and they come back later as if they find their way back in. It's weird.
A lot of people have told me that exact thing, George. Or some people use the word portal.
Yeah.
And other people have said, but you know what's confusing? Is that what were they doing during the days that they were missing and alive?
Exactly. If anything.
Yeah.
Were they suspended in some kind of animation? Who knows?
Well, what I'd be interested in, but many times the medical examiner won't release this part of the autopsy, is I'm interested in, what were the stomach contents that they found?
Mm-hmm. Good point. And you've had stories of people who have had somebody walking in a group, maybe the last person, and then they turn around and he's gone.
Well, there's a story written in the Huffington Post about my books, and they called the title of the story was Last in Line, and subtitle was Don't Be Last in Line. And that was, it should have really been, don't be last in line, don't be first in line, and always stay within close proximity to the people you're hiking with. Because it seemed as though that once you got out of view and out of sound range, or just around a corner, something happens and these people vanish.
You had told us a story on one of your last appearances of a little boy who was way out in front of his parents, and he came across a couple other hunters, and they were almost concerned, what's this little boy doing out here by themselves? Remember that one?
That was a Jared Atadero case in the late 1990s, northern Colorado. And his parents owned a resort along the Poudre River, and they were hosting a singles group from Denver. And just down the road a little bit, there was a fish pond and an area where the state raised fish. And the singles group said, hey, can we take one of your kids down there because they want to just look at the fish? And he said, sure. And then the little boy, Jared, 3 years old at the time, said, yeah, I want to go, Dad. And he says, oh, and a couple of the singles people said, yeah, we'll take care of him. So they take him over to the fish hatchery. Well, unbeknownst to Mr. Atadero, is these single people decided that they weren't going just to the fish hatchery, but they were going to drive up 8 more miles up the road and start walking this wilderness trail. It's called the Poudre Head Trailhead, Big South Trail. And without permission, they took his daughter and the son, and some group decided not to watch the boy anymore, and he started walking on the trail. And he got way ahead of everybody. And he walks up to these two fishermen along the Poudre, in a wilderness zone. And he says, hey, are there any bear around here? And the fishermen are obnoxious, and they say, no, there's no bear around here. You're bothering the fish. Leave us alone. And what's unbelievable to me being a dad, and I know it would be to you too, is these fishermen don't say, hey, you sit down right here, and you wait for your friends or whoever's
That's
watching
right.
you.
That's right. Exactly.
But you're not going to walk away in some wilderness trail with let a three-year-old walk away. But they did. And that was the last time anybody ever saw that boy alive. And Alan Atadero, the dad, and I are good friends now, and he's a great guy, and he can't get over what happened to his son, because 750 feet above that trail and down a long ways, 4 years later, they found the skull cap of the boy and a few small bones. They found his pants turned inside out, and they found his shirt almost completely intact. And the Colorado Bureau of Investigation got a hold of the clothing, and they couldn't find any blood on any of the clothing.
Mm.
And some mountain lion experts stated that a mountain lion didn't kill your son because of the way that there's no blood and the clothing isn't torn up.
Right.
And it's a complete whodunit. I don't know anybody that really knows what happened to that boy, because my son and I took the trip, and it was almost straight up from the side of that trail to where Jared's bones and his remains were found. One of the toughest hikes I've ever done. And to think that even somebody found that location 4 years later is unreal.
The German connection with so many of these people being of German descent, is that new? Did you just uncover that, or has that been ongoing?
You know, it might be that maybe I'm a slow learner and it comes to me slower than some, but after a while, when you start seeing the same sort of names, and when descent of a person is talked about in an obituary, German comes up more than normal. So for the last 2 years, I've been paying real close attention to this. And I'll just talk about this summer. A man named Morgan Heimer, 22 years old, was a tour guide in a group of people along the Colorado River in Grand Canyon National Park. They were a couple days into their trip, and they pulled to the side two large boats of people, and they take the side trip up this creek, and the people go way up the creek, maybe a mile or so with their guides, and there's a big pool and a waterfall, and they kind of hang out. And the creek's not even deep enough to drown in, per se. You know, you could walk across it ankle deep. But Heimer was in the back of the line when they were coming back on this creek excursion. He was wearing a life preserver, and he disappeared. And Morgan was a student at the University of Wyoming, and I can tell you that this shook up this tour group immensely. Somebody in that group heard about our work, and he called me, and he talked to me extensively about this and said, Dave, there was no place for Morgan to go. If he fell in the creek, he wasn't going anywhere. The sides of that canyon were straight up and down. And he was walking, and he was within a quarter mile of both boats and 50 people, or not 50, 30 people when he was walking. And nobody can believe he didn't make it back, because they all thought he was right behind them. So they brought in a huge amount of searchers from the National Park Service, volunteers from the tour group. They searched that area for a week. They didn't find one trace of Morgan Heimer. Again, German descent.
Baffling. I mean, what does law enforcement tell you, David? And I'm sure it's not confidential. What do they think's going on?
Well, when I gave that talk in front of NASA in 2012, and I gave the talk just like I'm talking to you now, I wasn't holding anything back. And at the end of it, there were three Alaska state troopers there, and Alaska state troopers are in charge of all search and rescue in Alaska. And one in their group stood up and he said, Dave, you're saying something that everybody in this group, that if they've been involved in search and rescue for a long period of time, they know is truthful. But nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to admit it's happening. And they want to analyze it away as just, well, that's unfortunate, or the dogs didn't want to search, or the person must have done something stupid to disappear. But he said, you know what? There's something else here, and people are going to have to wake up and listen to what you're saying. At the end of the talk, there was a line out the door of these searchers that wanted to tell their story of unusual things that people don't want to talk about.
Let's talk about some of those unusual things, David, when we come right back. And you're listening to David Politis talking about his work, Missing 411, incredible stories. We're going to get right into what do some of the park rangers say, what do they think? Okay, welcome back. David Politis with us. We're going to take calls with David next hour. So those of you calling now, just hold back a little bit. David, these park rangers, they do say that something strange is happening. What did they tell you?
I think that some of the, especially the sheriffs on some of these rural counties, they know something unusual is going on and they can't explain it. And some of them are reluctant to talk about it. Others are willing to say, you know, how this kid got this far, we don't know. How he got this high, we don't know. We just had a call from a sheriff on a case where a little boy's missing from their area in the middle of nowhere. And he said, you know, we heard about your work, and I want to get your opinion. And one of the things we told him is expand the perimeter of the search, because if you look at the numbers, if you believe that you've captured that area in the primary grid within a certain radius of where the majority are found, we have many, many instances where these kids are found far outside the grid areas in unexplained areas that nobody can understand how they got to. And in this instance, this sheriff was really open to it.
Huh. Do most of them have a common denominator reason for what is going on?
I think at the point where they throw up their hands and they say, well, we don't have any canines finding a scent. We don't have any tracks leaving the area. You know, they disappeared under the eyes of their parents and they can't explain how they quickly got away from there. I think that the way the mind of a law enforcement person works, they're looking for an answer where there really is no evidence of what happened.
I'm not going to ask you for the reasons because you won't tell me anyway. But is there a reason you don't tell us?
Well, I think, first of all, George, you got to remember that if somebody is good at A, doesn't mean he's good at B. And I might be good at
researching
and identifying profile points and gathering the minutiae of the data. But if you look at the list of things that people have come at me with over the years, I don't know how anybody could be an expert at all these things. I mean, the list is enormous. You hear about it every day in your job.
Are you baffled, or do you have really your own thoughts on what you think happened?
No, I'm baffled.
You're baffled.
Let's be serious about this, that I have thousands of friends on Facebook, and I'm pretty approachable on Facebook. I try to answer everybody that comes at me. And this is the truth. I don't know anybody that's read all 5 books and knows what happened, truthfully.
Wow. You see, I keep going back from, these are my scenarios, David, and then I want to get into some more of this. The paranormal always comes in. So, you know, UFOs, aliens are taking people. Bigfoot running around out there grabbing people. There's a serial killer out there all over the place doing this to the possibility. There's that portal we talked about where they stumble into it. Some of them, I'm sure, wander off and they get lost and they die. That's probably a smaller percent, but that's that possibility too. So it's all encompassing. There's just whatever it is, it's very weird.
And what I tell people too, on top of that, whatever it is 100% effective, because you don't hear about people coming back and saying, "Wow, this almost took me," or "I almost fell into this," or "I saw this weird light and it almost got me." You never hear these stories.
How about sex, male, female? Who gets taken the most?
So in the water-related student age deaths, it's 99.9% male. In the rural disappearances, it's probably 65, 70% male.
Hmm. Is that unusual?
In
a planet that's about 50-50, maybe more skewing toward women?
I would say that, you know, if you went out there on the trails or you went out there as an outdoorsman, you probably are going to see more men than women. Hunters, fishermen, things like that.
Right. They generally, more guys will be out camping, you're saying.
And in those instances where there are a family setting, I'm hoping that family setting is close. They keep an eye on each other. I don't think that there are as many women walking into the woods as single hunters or single fishermen as there would be men.
that city situation aside, where they're, you know, primarily men too, in that situation, why primarily these parks? What's so unusual about the park system or what a park is where these people disappear? Because is it easier for them to disappear?
See, I would say definitely not, because the park with the most disappearances fitting our profile, and this is by a long shot, is Yosemite National Park. It's not even close. I mean, there's so many people who have disappeared in that place that once you read about it, it will stun you. And in fact, there's probably 15 of them in the last 30, 40 years that have disappeared right in the valley of the park on a trail that is used by hundreds of people every day. Just a couple of years ago, a man named George Penca, P-E-N-C-A, disappeared on one of the biggest trails in Yosemite going up to the falls. He was last in line with a church group. Nobody could believe he disappeared. Nobody could understand where he went. But yet, this is a commonality with Yosemite, that you don't have to be in the far backcountry to disappear. You could disappear right in the middle of humanity in the park. It's a very, very strange scenario.
Just poof.
Exactly. And then they follow that search up with cadaver dogs weeks later, and they don't hit on any smell in the area. So it kind of tells you that the person isn't there.
When they're discovered dead, are they missing anything? Body parts? Anything?
Most of the time, not. And the vast, vast majority of the time, the cause of death is going to be hypothermia. And in the times when the family questions that, and there's a second autopsy, in almost every incident, that ruling is overturned. And it's either an unknown cause of death, or sometimes it's the secondary autopsy will say, if it's near water, it's a drowning. But that's very rare.
In an era of smartphones, where everybody's got them, I find this unusual as well, too. Does anybody ever report getting a call from this lost individual saying anything?
Well, that's a very interesting scenario you bring up. And in my last book, there's probably 7 or 8 incidents that I write about where the person is on the phone at the time they're disappearing. And a couple of times they'll say things like, oh my gosh, where are you? Help. And then the person on the other end says that they hear as though the person is moving away from the phone, and then they're not found.
Like they're pulled away from it?
It's described as though the person is moving away from the receiver on the phone.
Like he dropped the phone or put it down, and something is pulling him away.
And other times, there's people that say that, yeah, there's one incident, Brandon Swanson in Minnesota. He was supposedly on his way home. His car got stuck in a road. He told his, it was along a road he took hundreds of times going to school. He told his parents exactly where he was. They went there. The car wasn't there. He was on the phone with them, and he says, oh, my gosh, phone stops. He has never been found.
Huh.
And the car was found in an area where it's nowhere near where he was supposed to be. And his parents can't believe he was that far lost.
Have you followed this story of the Dyatlov Pass in Russia, where campers were found killed?
Yes.
Bizarre.
Oh, very.
I wonder if that has anything to do with some of the work you've been doing.
So I tell people to be very careful with this story, because there's been a couple of books written about it. One of the authors and myself have communicated about this many times. There's also a documentary that's on TV about this. And in the documentary, they show a picture of a big beast. The author of the book said, Dave, that is a complete lie.
It's a fabric.
The documentary is mixing truth with fiction.
Ugh. For TV, right?
For TV.
Not good.
And he says, I went to Russia. I investigated this. I saw every piece of evidence you can find, and nothing like that was in any of the evidence. Now, he said, there is a lot of strangeness that went on with this case. You know, what would cause people to run out of a tent in the middle of
right.
nowhere?
Or claw themselves out of the tent.
Yeah. So, yeah, he said, there's a lot of strange things, but he goes, you got to be really careful. There was a lot of untruths in that documentary.
See, I think it probably might have been at the time a Soviet military came across these campers who should not have been where they were, and I think the military did something to them. That's my practical thought.
Yeah, that's practical, George.
Very practical in the Soviet Union. But the other part of me says, no, there's something else going on, too. So let's get back to some of the missing. Paul Fugate. He's a park ranger, for crying out loud.
Yes, and Paul is the only national park ranger to ever disappear and not be found. And he was in a national monument in Arizona, Chiricahua National Monument, disappeared January 13th, 1980, a 20-year ranger for the Park Service. He was kind of a rebel park ranger, but a great park ranger. He had long hair and a mustache. And the National Park Service terminated him in 1971 for his long hair and beard. He got the ACLU involved, won his job back. And at the time he disappeared, the superintendent for the monument was gone, and so he was the temporary superintendent. At 2 p.m., he told the staff that he was going to go on a routine hike up into the park and be back soon. This is the only case, supposedly, in the files of the national park where the ranger vanished and he was never found,
never.
And there's no evidence of where he was. Now, people that know me know that I have uncovered many things about the Park Service, and this is one of the strangest ones. They have one of their employees that leaves and disappears on duty. There's a huge investigation. Arizona sheriffs are involved. The Arizona Department of Public Safety is involved. FBI is involved. I got a file that's about a foot and a half thick on this. It's huge. Now, he disappears, and the Park Service just decides that they're not going to give his wife any benefits, and his paycheck stops. Everything stops.
Because they can't prove he's dead?
They couldn't. They thought he voluntarily disappeared.
Just ran for the hills. Jeez.
Wife sued, won in court, won all of his benefits back, and to this day, he's still gone. Now, here's something about this case that has always bothered me. This is their file on their ranger who disappeared on duty. This happened in January of 1980. I asked for a case file on a 14-year-old girl who disappeared in Yosemite National Park in 1981, named Stacy Aris. And I knew about this case because she lived in the next city over from me in Saratoga, California. And Stacy rode in on horses with her dad, with like eight other people, into the back country of Yosemite. They got off their horses. Stacy walked with a 70-year-old man over to a rock. Everybody saw him sitting on the rock. She had her camera. She told the man she was going to walk down this boulder field and walk into this lake area a couple hundred yards below. Everybody saw her walk down inside this tree line surrounding the lake, and she disappeared. They found her lens cap to her camera inside this tree area near the lake. They never found her.
Jeez.
Now, I did a Freedom of Information Act request on the Park Service, and I get a call from one of their attorneys first asking me why I wanted the case. Then a couple weeks later, I get a call from a special investigator assigned to the Park Service asking me why I wanted the case. Now, this is an 81 case, and I asked the special investigator for the Park Service, has anybody looked at this case in 18 years? He said no. I asked him, is this a criminal case or a missing persons case? He says, it's a missing persons case. And I said, so why is everybody hesitating on giving this case to me? He goes, you'll never get this case. I said, what? He says, you'll never get this case. I said, why? He says, I'm not going to say, but you'll never see it. I said, but I have dozens of other cases that I've specifically asked the Park Service for that I have. He said, you're lying. I said, why would I lie? I'm telling you the truth. He said, nope, you'll never see this, and you're not going to get any more information out of me. I was a special agent from the Park Service, and his last name is Y.U., U, assigned to Yosemite. Now, why, George, would they give me a foot-and-a-half thick file on their own ranger who disappeared a year earlier and never, ever give me anything about the case involving Stacy Arrows?
Makes no sense. Makes no sense why they're hiding it.
No. No, and it's bothered me for a long time, and I don't see... In fact, I appealed it through a congressman, and I lost at that level, too, because what they're claiming is it's an open case. And I said, well, the missing ranger's an open case.
Do the witnesses, those that are out there, report seeing one of the following? Craft or lights? Do they see that, David?
I have never, ever seen that in any case.
Nothing. Strange creatures like Bigfoot.
Never have seen that in a case.
Anything ghostly or some kind of mist or fog?
No. And in fact, George, if you read all of the cases that are in our files, you would think, wow, how boring. There's nothing in them.
Nothing unusual.
Anything. No.
The unusual stuff is after the fact, the clothes and things like that.
Right.
But in terms of how they disappear, nothing. It's not like they go into the Bermuda Triangle of parks.
Well, if there is one of those, it's Yosemite, that's for sure. Yosemite, Sequoia, and Kings Canyon in that area have a lot of strange disappearances.
Lots of things, David, that we just don't understand, that science just doesn't understand. Can we assume for a moment that this planet may have these portals that somehow are connected to another dimension, another multiverse, and for some strange reason, these people are going in there. And then when they come back, if they die, maybe it's exposure, I don't know what. Is that possible?
Well, the way I explain this is that you have to understand that this is something that's very calculated, because it's while a person is open to be victimized. This doesn't happen ever in front of a group. There's never a witness to it. It happens at a point where the person gets ahead of the group, behind the group, or is alone. And if there was, let's just say, I have no idea because I know nothing about this, but if there was a portal that opened up, why don't these portals ever open up in front of a group of five people?
It's always one person.
Always one.
What if the portals are opened up on purpose?
That's why I'm saying it's calculated, yeah. Whatever it is.
And then, I mean, in the case of women and alien abductions, they talk about, they've been implanted with babies. They take the fetus. Strange things like that happen. You don't get any of that, do you?
You know, George, I've been a MUFON investigator for 14 years. I am very open to these things. I keep my mind and my ears open to all of these things. I never hear this from these people.
There's no marks on the bodies, no chokes, no gunshots, no stab wounds, nothing like that.
Nothing.
If somebody were choked with the mere hands, wouldn't something show up on the throat? Marks or something?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, if you get choked and you get killed, your hyoid bone inside your neck will break, and that's an obvious cause of strangulation.
So we're not getting any of that?
No.
Now, of some of these cases, and how many have you looked at now?
We've documented about 1,600.
1,600. Let's talk percents when we come back. And welcome back, David Politis with us. So, David, of the 1,600 cases that you have looked at, let me ask you some percents again. I just work mathematically this way. Of the 1,600, what percent would you say died naturally? They wandered off, they got lost, and they just died because of the elements.
I would say that the claim was the majority did, but again, when you go to the secondary autopsies, they show something else. So that makes me think that either the medical examiners don't want to release the truth, or they're not being proficient in their analysis, or they're passing on the autopsy altogether and just making a public statement about it.
Right. Maybe they're lazy. They just don't want to go through with it.
You know, I hate to say that, but I will tell you that there are two medical examiners I talk to all the time, and they know something strange is going on. They've admitted it to me. One of them contacted me proactively and talked about it.
Now, when they say something strange is going on, what do they mean?
Something abnormal that they don't understand.
Aha. Beyond their control?
Yes.
We're honing in on something very bizarre, aren't we?
I think so. I think it's been going, I mean, we've documented this back to 1752, so it's been going on for hundreds of years.
Nobody spent more times out in the forests and the woods than Native Americans back in the old days. Any myths or stories about disappearances in that culture?
You know, I have a couple really good friends that are Native Americans. One's a Cheyenne Arapaho Native American chief, and he told me, he said, you know, Dave, I can remember back when I was a young boy, and my mom would tell me, you never leave the light of the fire when we're in the woods camping. You stay close to the fire always. And he said, you know what? I didn't quite know what she meant, and she never made any innuendos or threats, but he said, after reading your books, he goes, that's probably wise advice Mom gave me.
Yeah, I would think so. So what about a serial killer? What percent of the 1,600? There might be several serial killers. I mean, the FBI says there could be 20 to 50 serial killers roaming this country right now, killing anywhere from 2 to who knows how many people. So what about that possibility? Some sicko is hiding in his van in a campground, and he sees somebody go by, and he goes and gets them.
So I try to keep a pretty open mind about this stuff, and I think that it's possible there may be one or two out of all the hundreds of cases, but I seriously doubt, in fact, I'm positive, that this can be anything that's happening on the trail. Because if it was happening, I mean, I live in Colorado, and I know that a lot of us carry guns on the trail. If somebody tried to do something to us, there's going to be a shootout.
You got that right.
You know, nobody's going to take me anywhere. I'm going to end my life right there.
You're going to go down in a blaze of glory, aren't you?
That's right. I mean, and I know a lot of women carry guns on the trails out here too, and you just don't hear about this kind of stuff happening on the trail.
Are you scared of camping and hiking since you've been doing this work?
I could say that the way I handle myself and the way I go out has changed a lot. I used to go into the woods all the time by myself. I used to carry a gun all the time just because I was a police officer, but I would always carry a gun with me and I'd go out. But I can tell you that I never go out now without a personal transponder and my gun. And within the last year, I've gotten a specific type of satellite phone because it also has a transponder on it. But I can tell you that it's a very rare day I go anywhere out there alone anymore.
These disappearances, David, how often are they happening?
More than the public realizes. I mean, just this last summer, I can count probably 10 or 12. There was almost one a week happening somewhere in North America.
Jeez. I mean, people can't just get lost that much. That doesn't happen, does it? Wandering off.
You know what I tell people is that when I'm alone, I think I'm twice as safe as when I'm with somebody else. I don't go near cliffs. I know the exact route I'm going. I don't take any chances.
Right.
And I don't think I'm unique that way. I think most people are that way.
I mean, accidents happened. The girl a few weeks ago taking photographs of people. She's backing up. She goes over the cliff. I mean, that happens. That's a horrible accident, but it's not a disappearance because everybody knows what happened. They saw that. And, you know, it's not that she fell off the cliff and nobody was around and God, who knows where she is. These are bizarre cases. These are people who simply vanish in thin air.
You know, let me just detract this just for a second, but there was a case I wrote about in 2013, I think, that hits what you're going at right on the head. And there was a retired nurse named Geraldine Largay who wanted forever to hike the Appalachian Trail, and she was nearing the end of her hike up in Maine. And her husband had been married for 40 years. They met every other day she would call him and say, hey, I'm ready to meet. He would resupply her. Sometimes they'd spend the night. He was like her supply chain. It was like a match made in heaven. She was a super smart woman. And George, her nickname was the inchworm. She moved slowly.
Yeah, methodically.
Exactly. Super smart lady. Well, she's hiking along this Appalachian Trail. She had just seen her husband the night before. She called him. She said, hey, we'll meet tonight. She was 1,150 miles into her trip, and she disappeared. And the Maine Warden Service took over the search in 2013. And in fact, for the people who watch the show on TV about Maine Warden Service, they had a special about this disappearance, and the guys were absolutely stumped. The day she disappeared, the clouds opened up, and it rained heavy for 3 days. Now, as her husband would say, my wife knew that trail. She wouldn't get off the trail. She knew where she was going. She knew exactly where we were going to meet. She knew the pace she had to keep. She was an altogether super smart, experienced hiker. She disappears. And they covered an area of that trail, and they kept moving the perimeter out and out and out. Now, they covered a 4.2 square mile area near Lone Mountain and Mount Abram, and they called it, they thought they covered it completely. The head of the Warden Service called her disappearance mystifying. Now, her body was found almost 2 years later, October 14th of this year, outside of an area of Reddington Township, 28 miles from the primary search zone that they had. But they said that they had covered this area too, as well. Now, her body was found by a contractor doing survey work. This is the part, George, you're not going to believe. Doing survey work on property owned by the U.S. Navy. Now, why would the Navy own property in the middle of Maine wilderness? It was a survival, evasion, resistance, and escape school. There were huge signs completely around the property saying, stay out. And the majority of the property was fenced, and it was heavily guarded. When her body was found by a surveyor, he said he couldn't believe what he found, and he called NCIS, and they responded. Then they called the Warden Service because they thought it was some type of criminal element.
Sure.
Or possibly somebody else missing. She was found on prohibited land. The official for the Maine Warden Service said, I don't know how she got there. I don't know why she was there. And it's completely mystifying why she was found in that location because she wouldn't have left that trail. Now, it's 2 years after she disappeared. She's essentially bones at this point. And the Maine medical examiner said she died from a lack of food, water, and exposure, which is a complete lie. She had a backpack, she had food, she had supplies. How are you going to tell if somebody died from lack of food and water when they're all bones?
Well, and she ended up 20-plus miles away from where she disappeared.
Yes.
Which is bizarre.
Bizarre.
Does anybody ever report that these individuals, that they hear them screaming or yelling or help me or anything like that?
So there were people that they surmised were within 2 miles or less of Geraldine when she disappeared. And they interviewed everybody, and they went into the trail logs. And I can tell you the Warden Service did a good job on this, trying to track things down. Nothing. Now, she was found 2 miles off the trail into the middle of the woods on this Navy property. Explain, if she had a cell phone, she had clothing, she had a sleeping bag, coat, and food, how did this woman end up in that location?
20-plus miles away. Strange.
Makes no sense.
Strange. What about the case of Janet Castrojohn?
So, going back to Arizona now, on that case, in the same national monument where Paul Fugate disappeared, Janet Castrojohn, this year in June, was with her parents. She was 44 years old. She had a mental disability. She was in an accident when she was 18 years old, had a traumatic brain injury. She is partially blind and disabled. She went with her mom to leave a letter off at the campground pay station. family was in a motorhome. And as after her and her mom went to this pay station, they stopped at the restroom, and Janet waited outside for her mom. Janet wasn't a small person. She was 5'3", 250 pounds. Her mom came out within minutes, and Janet wasn't there.
Gone.
Gone, completely gone. Her mom didn't hear anything, didn't see anything.
Not a scuffle. You'd hear something. A body being dragged away, anything. You'd hear that.
Nothing. They brought in canines, and the sheriff's office for that area said there is nothing they can guarantee she's not there. And that was in June of this year. She hasn't been found. That was in an area called Rustler Park in the Chiricahua Mountains, within miles of the monument where Fugate disappeared. Now, you go fast forward 3 months to September 13th of this year, George, the same area in the same park. Lawrence Cosden, 69 years old, came into the park on the 13th, bought a two-day permit, had his cat with him. People said they saw him on the trail with the cat, just walking along, having fun. He told friends he was going to be back in Tucson on the 17th. His car was found on the 15th with an expired permit. They started to search. Bad weather moved in. They searched for a couple days. They found nothing. He was never found. They found no evidence of where he could be. That's two people missing in the same park in 3 months. Neither were ever found.
I'm beginning to think, David, that there's something very evil going on. There's some like, almost demonic. I don't know why I feel that way, but it's just there's something that I just can't put together yet.
Well, I want you to put it together and tell us because I'm interested.
I mean, is that possible? I mean, could there be a force out there that is so evil that it thrives on killing? And I don't mean a human form, something supernatural.
You know, you and I kind of move in the same circles and know a lot of the same people. And every once in a while when we're at an event, somebody will come up and talk to me and they'll say something. And I heard something the other day from someone I won't name, but it's someone who's brilliant. And they said, you know, Dave, I've read your books and, you know, maybe it's something so strange that we can't even grasp what it might be. But it's obviously got an intellect that we don't understand. And he said, you know, you got to keep an open mind on these things because the conventional ways we think sometimes just doesn't work. And it's one of those things you hear every once in a while. And I walked around the rest of the day going, wow, you know, maybe that's true. I have no idea.
It is so baffling. These smiley face killers, or whatever it is that still happening?
So the deaths of the young people in the rivers, absolutely. And I think that's something that, just like the park issues, it's something we're going to have to keep our eyes on, because it's something that people in the world have no idea is happening. It's a guarantee that it is going on. It's a guarantee that we don't understand it. And it's continuous. And October 3rd of this year, a man named Joe Brune, 23 years old, left a bar in Otsego, Minnesota. Friend said he had a lot to drink. He was walking towards a field of corn behind the bar and the Holiday Inn where he disappeared, near Michael and Monticello. And his friend said he didn't come back to the room and he wasn't seen. And the day he disappeared, I looked at a map and I said, you know what?
Here we go.
You know why? Because within a half a mile of where he disappeared was the Mississippi River. And there's a lot of people that have disappeared have been found in that river. Well, they searched the area. They found nothing. Where Joe disappeared, there's a cluster that we've identified of missing people in that exact same area. Just as a side note, Joe Brune, nationality, German.
Huh.
Well, make a long story short, he was missing for 5 days, and he's found in the Mississippi River. They still haven't released the cause of death.
Jeez. No happy face on the shore or anything like that?
No.
Huh. You know, if we could, I don't know. Do you think satellite imaging has picked up anything about where they were? If we had like the girl who was outside of the restroom waiting for her mother, if she had a pinpointed time, I wonder if they could go to the satellites and see what happened.
That would be an outstanding investigative tool, and you would hope that the sheriff's office would have done that.
I wonder if the National Security Agency would release that kind of information.
It'd be a great question, but doubtful, I would say.
I wonder what you would see. And you know what's frightening to me, David, is picturing these individuals, regardless of what hell they went through, something horrible happened to them. Can you imagine what they went through going through that moment? Oh, that's chilling.
You know, George, the thing, I try not to think about that, but being a parent, I do think about the hell that the parents have gone through with all of these people who they don't have any closure with, and they're gone.
Yeah.
And I personally can't think of anything worse being a parent not knowing what happened to my child.
Psychics, remote viewers, have they been called in on any of these?
Interesting. There is one of the most world-famous remote viewers you can imagine. And I put him onto a specific case, and I am so disappointed that this guy, he didn't get a hold of me for 3 weeks. I called him. He apologized.
Do we know who he is?
I know who he is.
No, do we know who he is?
Me. Oh, yeah, you do.
Okay.
And make a long story short, I called him 6 different times, weeks apart, and it's either he wasn't interested or he's so scattered in his thoughts that it wasn't even worth pursuing because he never gave me anything.
That's disappointing. Should we guess who it is?
No.
All right, you won't tell me anyway. I know you. We're going to come back. Final hour to go with David Politis. Phone calls next. This is the interactive portion of the program now. We're going to take your phone calls with David Politis. And again, his works, as he mentioned, go to his website, which is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. We'll get to your calls ASAP. David Politis with us. David, I'm going to guess, too, because you're the only one publicizing this, researching this, that whatever is going on is so horrendous. They don't want to tell us, they being a government or some watchdog group, they don't want to tell us it's that bad. That's where I'm beginning to come from.
Well, as you know, but others may not, is years ago I filed a Freedom of Information Act request against the National Park Service for a list of missing people from their jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and said that they don't track missing people. Even though you can go online and you can track the number of climbers that have died on Mount Rainier, which is a list they keep, or you can track a list of movies that have been made on national park property, which is a list they keep, but they don't keep a list of missing people. Also filed the same request against the U.S. Forest Service, and they came back with the same response that they don't keep a list of missing people.
I don't believe them.
Well, I don't think any journalist out there believes that, and it's troublesome because why wouldn't you want to know how many people and where they went missing? And I can tell you every sheriff I've spoke to the last year, and I said, how long would it take you to get a hold of a list of missing people in your jurisdiction? He said, less than a minute. And I said, you know, that's kind of it. You know, you were talking just a second ago, George, about contact, and I get asked all the time about where I will be and they can contact me, or where you'll be, because I'm talking to you all the time, where you'll be.
Mm-hmm.
And I, just so everyone knows, is the 19th of February to the 22nd of February, both you and I are going to be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles.
That's right.
At the Hilton at LAX. And we'll be there for a couple days. And I know Saturday night you and I are actually going to be in the same place for something you're doing that night. So it's a good place to go if you want to talk to us, because we'll be there.
And the websites will have all that. I don't have mine up yet on that, but I will in another month or so. And it's always a huge event, David.
I'm looking forward to it, and
yeah,
I appreciate it.
You have some fun. Let's go to the phones, because every line is lit. We're going to start by going to George, truck driving in Indiana, east of the Rockies. George, get us started. You're on with David Politis.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
Good. I got something to cross over with David.
All right.
Okay, in history, this is true history. I believe they was English and not German, though. On the East Coast, I believe it was around the Carolina area, they dropped off a bunch of people to make a small town in this country. I think it was around 1700. And when they came back, they built buildings, you know, homes. And when they came back for them, they was all gone, all missing.
I heard that story.
Yes, that's the true history. And the whole town was gone. Everything was in place. There were dinner plates on the tables. And they was all gone. And about 100 years later, they found a group of Indians around Idaho area. They spoke English, and they never knew why.
Now, the Donner Party, that was around California, Nevada, wasn't it, David?
Truckee, California.
Yeah. And in this particular case, George, you say it was where?
Around the Carolina area, North Carolina, South Carolina. But it's true history. They never explained it. They never knew what happened. And that they was all gone. All missing.
Was there a name of the group or anything?
Yes, but I don't remember, George. You have to
all right, David, how about you? Do you remember it at all?
No, I don't.
I have to investigate that. You know what? I bet these people have been disappearing since the beginning of time.
Yeah, and I think when you have those mass disappearances, those are going to catch some notoriety. But again, when you have these disappearances where everyone can kind of just slough it off and say, oh, you know, people disappear in the woods, or a person got drunk and fell in the water. Or you have those kind of things, and you think, well, now if you had the ability to take somebody and you could get the public to accept it as an accident, how would you do it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think people don't see the big picture. When they realize, by looking at your books, 1,600 cases that you looked at, then it's really a huge story.
But the question is, George, really, how big is the story, because the government's not releasing the information?
That's right. It could be five times bigger than what you've uncovered.
Right.
Let's go to Brooke in Chicago now. Good morning, Brooke. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, George and David.
Hi.
I'm calling because I wondered if David had heard of the story of Karina Chikatova, the three-year-old little girl who was lost in Siberia on July 29th of this year.
Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, I heard it first on the BBC World Service, I guess the day or the day after she was found, and they were reporting the story. But I was flabbergasted when the details came out, because I've listened to David so many times on your program, George, and it ticked so many boxes, I couldn't believe it. So she was staying with her grandmother in Siberia, where she lived, and seemingly...
I'm losing you on your phone, so get as close to it as you can.
Maybe I could just move it. She disappeared, wandered off with her puppy, and was gone for 12 days. They had hundreds of searchers. They had helicopters and drones. They had a dog that could not pick up a scent. And on the 12th day, she was found by a river in a forest. Every single night that she was gone, the weather had dipped to zero. And she was found with no shoes on, with a torn T-shirt, with only her little tights on. And when she was asked how she lived, she said she had eaten berries. And so many of these factors were things that I had heard David talk about so many times.
Is this a case, David, that you would have added to your group?
I know the case very well. And yes, I would have added this to the group. Just like the lady said, it hit on so many of the things we've talked about. No canine scent, bad weather, berries involved, near a river, loss of shoes, Trackers couldn't find her for days. Then all of a sudden she's found and she's in good shape.
Amazing. Now, the other story that the caller was talking about before, these ended up being the Roanoke Island colonists that disappeared.
Hmm.
And that was back in the 1500s, I think. Something like that. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, thanks for that call, Brooke. Appreciate it. Steve in Shelton, Washington. Hey, Steve, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hi, George and Dave. Good morning.
You too.
I just want to say I live in rural Washington in a very heavily forested area, and when I go hiking alone, I usually have dogs, and I guess I'm glad that I have ancestry of Swedish and Norwegian.
Me too.
Yeah, I guess I should caution anybody named Wolfgang not to go out alone.
But that's right.
Anyway, my question for Dave is, I listen to the news quite a bit, and here just within the last 2 years, there was a woman that literally wrote the book on the area of Mount Rainier that she ended up disappearing. She had been with a friend who was hiking. The hiker either got fatigued or whatever, and she said she was going to go ahead for a short while, and then she never came back. Her body was found. It was found above the snow line, I think about 2,500 vertical feet where she had originally left her friend. And I'm not sure exactly if Dave knows exactly if there's been any updates of how she died, what the coroner said, and if he has any better idea as what happened to her.
I know this story well as well. She had written books about the Rainier trails. She had written about trail life. She knew the trails like the back of her hand. Her friend stated that she would be the last person to disappear up there. And the reality of it was that she was with a friend. They had walked up a trail right to Snowline. And he said, yeah, I'm just going to stop. And she goes, well, I'm just going to walk up here just a little bit. I'll be right back. She never came back. She was found over the top of one mountain, down into a drainage on another. And I believe they said that she died from hypothermia. But Rainier is another cluster zone that I've written about extensively in my books, and there's a lot of strange, strange things that happens there. And again, she was the last person that anybody thought would ever get lost on the trails.
Jeez. Have you heard of any disappearances around Nome, Alaska, David?
You know, there's a series of stories about Nome disappearances. A lot of them deal with the First Nations and Native Americans that live there. And I spent almost a month looking at a series of cases, and none of them come close to what we're talking about.
None. Okay. There was a movie on that, but I don't think it's very accurate. I think it's Hollywood. And, you know, they made it sound like there was an extraterrestrial presence, but I don't think that was real.
Yeah.
Robert in Vancouver, Canada, on the international line. Robert, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you for having me on, David. It's an absolute pleasure. I follow you closely. Here in Vancouver, there's a lot of strange areas where people disappear on a regular basis. And although I grew up as an urbanite, last 10 years I've been compelled to go out into the woods and such. And I go very prepared when I go alone. And I've actually been compelled to kind of search out areas where people have disappeared. And I've been to a few areas that are just, somehow I felt that are just absolutely evil, you know, absolutely dark. And I've had a lot of experiences out in the woods and the deep woods and around Vancouver. And about 6 years ago, I approached one of the local native bands, and they went into, I guess, one of their administrative offices. And I went in to tell some stories, and they, you know, the first I got a look like I was insane or crazy. And after a couple hours of talking to them, they referred me to somebody else. And after about 6 hours in different meetings of talking and explaining the stories and things I've seen and what I felt, finally someone opened up to me there. And they acknowledged that in their history there were areas that were they viewed as just evil, where people, you know, there were spirits that were bad that disappeared. And the advice, they gave me advice in terms of walking through the woods that, you know, if you have a negative feeling or feeling like something is watching you, that then you're open enough to realize it and to stop and look around And they told me that, you know, the anything, you know, the evil spirit could be anything. It could be a rock. It could be a tree. It could be anything. And then to stop and look and almost spiritually ask for permission to continue to go. And if you feel like you have permission, go forward. If not, leave. And they told me stories throughout the history of their tribe, you know, I guess of the history of their native history, where people just, you know, disappear, where there is negative things out there. And I don't know if you've ever had if there's anything about folklore or native history that talks about this.
David, we talked a little bit about the mythology, but most of the cases you've looked at are, all the cases, they're all real disappearances or deaths, aren't they?
They are, and one of the titles of one of my books is called Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail.
Yeah, that's right.
And the book centers on the number of disappearances of people in areas with devil in its name, Devil's Mountain, Devil's Den, Devil's Gulch, and it's surprising how many people have vanished in those areas.
Tell us the story of Jelani Brinson.
Wow. That's in my latest book, and that one story probably encompasses everything you need to know about the facts on the majority of the stories in that book. Jelani was an African-American. He was a super smart kid. He was a Division II outstanding athlete at his college. He went missing in an area of Anoka, Minnesota. And it's an area where the Mississippi and the Rum Rivers come together, kind of northwest of Blaine. He was an honorable mention, All-American Division II soccer player. He attended the Baptist Christian School. Christian faith was the center of his life, it was told. He rarely used alcohol, and he was working at the time for Sprint Stores in Anoka. His mom was an emergency room physician. He came from a really smart family. April 17th, 2009, 7:30 at night, he went to the Mad Jack Sports Cafe in Anoka with some friends, and he tried calling his mom to tell her where he was at, and he didn't get a hold of her. When his mom got home that night, she realized that he had tried to call her, and he had texted her that he was at the same restaurant she was at. It's pretty weird. When you understand that 2.5 hours later, at 10 o'clock, he went to a home rented by a fellow employee at Sprint. At about 5 minutes later, he told a buddy he was just going to go outside to have a smoke. Buddies went out a few minutes later, and he was gone.
Gone. Huh.
Now, jeez. April 18th, he disappeared on the 17th. The 18th, his family reports him as missing. 50 to 60 people go to that area around this rented home, and one friend finds Jelani's hat and one of his shoes directly across the street from the home, right near a fence. More searching, they found his second shoe on some pipes in a backyard of a home in that area. His mom told searchers that his hat fits snugly to his head, and you almost had to pull it off to get it off. They brought bloodhounds to the scene. They didn't come up with any scent, and they never walked across the street from where the house was at. Now, April 25th, an employee at a Greenhaven golf course 500 feet from that rented home saw something unusual in a pond. It was Jelani's body. The depth of the water was 2 to 3 feet, and the body, when they found it, was still in rigor. It still had rigor mortis. It was still stiff. There were no injuries to the body, and Jelani was found face up in the water, and most, like a huge percentage of male bodies float face down. Why his was face up, we don't know. Now, rigidity or rigor starts in the body 6 to 12 hours after death and typically leaves the body in 24 hours and is completely gone from the body in 36 hours. Jelani was missing for 8 days or approximately 190 hours. At this point, yellow flags are starting to go up to law enforcement. And they reported, this is the part where somebody was really on the ball, they reported that Jelani was wearing socks that were completely clean and had not walked in dirt or grass. the statement from the police, the body was somehow placed in that pond. The medical examiner couldn't find the cause of death and said he did not drown. There were no drugs in his system.
Jeez.
Autopsy concluded Jelani was dead 36 to 48 hours. Where was he for 5 days, George?
Anybody's guess. David, we're going to come back. As a matter of fact, in Russia, they say that several hundred people vanish in Russia every day. While I'm in Laughlin, Nevada, tomorrow and Saturday at a major UFO event, so Jimmy Church will be filling in for me on Friday with some great stuff. So make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast show. And then we've got the Lisa Gar, I think, coming up the week after. And Sunday, too. Super. Good for Lisa filling in here where we give you live shows 7 nights a week. And welcome back to Coast. It is our final segment with David Politis. And David, take a few moments to tell people about your books and the movie and what they can do to learn more about what's going on here and how to get a hold of you.
Well, they can get a hold of me at canammissing.com, like Canadian American, canammissing.com. And you can look through there. We have current cases that we talk about, and there's also a link there for all the books. The Missing 411 movie should be out sometime in the next 9 months, but on our website we do keep track of that. And I am on Facebook, so if you want to reach me there, you're welcome to.
And these cases continue, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, tonight we talked probably about 6 of them that have occurred in the last 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just truly unbelievable. What does law enforcement do primarily in these cases? Do they continue? Do they put the file away somewhere? What do they do?
So missing people in law enforcement, excuse the word, but it's sort of the bastard child of the system. Nobody really wants to work the cases, predominantly because a lot of people, there's nothing against the law if you just want to drop out and you want to disappear. And it's frustrating from a law enforcement perspective if you work your heart and soul for 3 or 4 months on a case trying to find a loved one for a family and you find out, yeah, the person just wanted to move away and didn't want anything to do with their family anymore. It's very disheartening.
Sure is.
It's a place, missing persons cases usually are worked by people who don't want to be in that unit. It's very rare that somebody wants to work the cases, unfortunately.
What about the family members, David, who just don't get closure? God, that's got to be frustrating.
That truly is a living hell. And I've met too many along the way that aren't doing well, that it just destroys their life. I can think of one man specifically, Mr. Dennis Martin's dad in Tennessee. Dennis disappeared almost 40 years ago, 45 years ago, and when I interviewed the man a few years ago, he was a broken person still, and he just died last year, and I know it ruined his life. He was not a happy person for his entire life.
Have there ever been reports of more than one person at a time disappearing, maybe two people at a time?
It's very rare, but there's probably a handful of cases in the 5 books.
So it's happened, but not a lot?
No.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Let's go to Suzanne in Seattle. Hey, Suzanne, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
Glad to talk to you both.
You too.
I did hear you, David, talking about the case of Karen Sykes in Washington, and I was well aware of her because I'm an avid hiker in Washington.
Oh, boy, be careful.
And I watched that closely. I was looking for some idea. The main things I have is 3 things here. One thing is that I like really high elevations, and I'm frequently up above tree line. And listening to you, it sounds like most of these folks are at lower elevations. So I'd like to hear about that. Secondarily, I don't have a German last name. However, I am a quarter German from my mother's father, and I'm wondering if that puts me at any risk. And the last thing is, I hike lots of the real high places, and I've been in Kings Canyon and in Yosemite. In Yosemite, I've always hiked out of the Tuolumne Pass area. I've never been in a valley. And listening to the few times I've heard you, it seems like you're always describing people that were operating out of the valley. So do you have cases out of Tuolumne Pass?
So So there are cases throughout Yosemite, lower elevations, higher elevations, very high elevations. There's a woman that disappeared this last summer out of Victoria, Canada. She was hiking alone at very high elevation. They found a series of her articles straggled out over a 100-yard area along the top of the ridge, and they searched for her for 2 weeks. They never found her. She was an older lady. And I can tell you that it doesn't matter if you're in high elevation or low elevation. You just happened to catch a conversation here tonight where we were talking predominantly about lower, but don't think that there's any safety higher. And in fact, a lot of the people that are found at much higher elevation than the point where they disappeared, which is outside the bounds of normal search and rescue, and it baffles them.
I can't believe none of these people has had a gun. You would think one of them would, David. Nothing, huh?
So there are a few hunters that have disappeared, and they haven't been found, that were carrying guns. But the majority of, there's not one person that I know of that was carrying a gun and a personal locator beacon that has disappeared.
How unusual can that be?
That's very strange.
My gosh. I don't know, David. You know, I've looked at your books. You've been very nice to send them to us. This is the weirdest story I think I've ever covered. It's just, words can't describe it.
You know, I think, George, that for years and years, even when you and I were kids, it's always just been assumed that anyone can disappear in the wilderness, and everyone takes it for granted that it happens, and it's accidental, and it might be stupidity on the part of the hiker, or the hunter, or the fisherman, whatever. But I really went into the archives to try to find anybody that looked at this from a different perspective. And if I hadn't, I could probably say if I hadn't had this hunch and this information given to me by two Park Service people that they were concerned about the number of disappearances and the circumstances, I doubt I would have ever stumbled upon it myself.
Let's take final calls here. Eddie's in San Antonio, Texas, first-time caller. Hi, Eddie. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi, Eddie.
How you doing? Mr. Politis, I've been trying to get a hold of you. I'd finally be able to talk to you. If you take away all the phenomenon that's away, the vortex of the UFOs, take that all out. What you have left, and what I've really been thinking about this since I first heard this on Coast to Coast last year, it's really bothered me that these people are missing. And what I really think, and this is opinion, that this is a coordinated effort on a high-tech level. That's the only way I can describe it to me. And that's my instinct, and it's incredibly sinister.
What do you think they want, Eddie, if it's coordinated and if it's high-tech?
You know what? At this point, I'm not going to say what they want. I would like to find out who they are, and because I think this is something really ghastly, and I would like to see UFOs and vortexes taken out of this. This is a criminal investigation. Okay, this is what I think, and you can have your wildest guess what's happening to these poor folks. Okay, but I really think it's whatever it is, it ain't good.
No, it's not. That's true.
So that's why this is kind of like really important. And I want to thank you, David Politis, for the work you have done and the awareness that you've given the public.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
David, what about a cult operating all around the park systems?
So you got to remember, George, that there's no tracks, there's no scent trail.
No, there's nothing.
There's none of the things that humans would leave behind.
There's no animal tracks. There's nothing.
No.
It's as if whatever happened, if there are no tracks, then you have to deduce two things. One, either it's something dimensional, it's not physical, or they're being lifted up from the air.
So there's a quote I have in one of my books from a search and rescue administrator from the California Search and Rescue Center in Northern California. His name was Grizz Adams. salt of the earth kind of guy, the kind of guy you want leading your search and rescue.
Yeah.
30 years experience. And there was a guy who disappeared on the side of Mount Shasta that I wrote about, and it was in the middle of summer. There's literally no place to go. And I asked Grizz, I go, Grizz, where did the guy go? And he goes, Dave, he either went in or he went up, but he isn't on.
But he's not on. And they're quiet. They don't scream. It's almost, I'm beginning to think that they stumble into some portal that might be in certain areas all around this planet, not just the parks, but they're out there, and they just merely disappear.
But then my question goes back to, there's got to be some intellect
controlling
it, otherwise we would see it open up in the middle of a city.
You would think so. That's right. Exactly. It wouldn't be just parks. And people would be disappearing right in front of other people.
Right.
I mean, and you've had these reports where people basically blink their eyes and the person's gone, right?
Yes. I've had parents say that my son was right behind me. I've had people in bars in my latest book say, the person was right there. I didn't even see him leave.
Yeah. Rugby, North Dakota, David's with us. Hi, David. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, or the disappearance case that I heard on this program a while back about that lady in Canada that was in that hotel, and she was in that elevator and acted kind of strange. They didn't find her till a week later up in the water supply. I was just wondering if that kind of fit in with his research or what he thought.
Sure. Do you remember that case, David? You do.
That was Elisa Lamb.
That's right.
Downtown Los Angeles. She was from British Columbia. I wrote extensively about that. I got the coroner's report on that. And, yeah, I put that in because there are multiple parts to that story that fit with what we know is going on. Namely, she disappeared inside of an urban area. They brought canines to the scene. The dogs could never pick up a scent. They took the dogs to the roof. They couldn't pick up a scent. There's a strange video that goes with it that's online people can look at. There's a lot of things about that story that make zero sense.
Found in a water tank.
On top of a high-rise building in Los Angeles. And part of what I wrote about is that the history of that building would make you scream. It's so bad.
God.
Serial killers have lived there, multiple suicides. And
bad energy. Bad energy.
I'm sorry, George, go ahead.
There's bad energy in that place.
Very bad. Very bad.
Let's go to Montreal now. Mark's with us. Hey, Mark, let's get you in. Maybe one more after that. Go ahead.
How are you, George? Hope you come to Montreal one day and do a car.
I'd love to.
Okay. Mr. Politis, I just want to tell you that a lot of people are disappearing at provincial parks in Quebec, and the provincial police, which is the equivalent to the state police in the States, they never come up with anything. They just disappear off the map. Just wondering if you have any stories about things that happen in the Quebec provincial parks.
He's got a lot. Missing 411, Western United States and Canada. It happens, David.
That's right. I've written about many, many cases in Canada that mimic exactly what's going on in the States.
Do you believe that the park rangers are very cognizant of what might be happening? They just won't say anything. Maybe they're scared to say anything.
No, I don't think they have I think the rank and file that you see at the parks, great, great people, they don't have a clue.
They don't have a clue there.
I think their administration, the top people in the administration, they've got to know.
And they can't stop it. That's the thing. And whatever it is, if it's so bad and you don't announce it, it's because you don't want to scare the tourists away. And if they came out and said, hey, there's a high probability that one of you may disappear and this is where you're going, it would shut down the park systems.
Yeah, you would think so.
Squeeze in Ernie, truck driving in West Virginia. Only got a minute, Ernie. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks, sir.
Years ago, my dad told me about this guy he worked with. He had disappeared, and he'd been gone for over a year. And the only thing missing was him and his pickup. And what was ironic is they found him the next day. someone had stolen the car, this was in Michigan, and dished it in the pond at the Clarington Township Park. And when they pulled the car out, they found his truck underneath the car, and he was still in it.
Oh.
And people have been swimming there all summer.
Well, I got to tell you, David, there's a million of them. Hey, thanks for that, Ernie. I appreciate that. There's a million of them. David, we're out of time. You stay in touch. Have a happy Thanksgiving if I don't talk to you before that, okay?
George, always a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. I sincerely appreciate it.
David Politis, again, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He's got a series of five books out and the movie soon. And I got to tell you, folks, in my history of my career, this story just chills me. It really does. I think about those people the moment something happened to them, whatever it might be. Can you imagine that? For Nathan Staten, Gina Salvati, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.